Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I am so excited to be here with an absolutely inspirational and, for me, quite aspirational person. Her name is Amy Yegovinci, and she is phenomenal. Amy, thank you, thank you, thank you for being here with us.
Oh, no problem, Brooke. I'm happy to be here.
Yes. So, Amy, if you could just give me, and I know that you have quite a vast and a pretty broad background, could you give me the Cliff Notes version of who Amy is?
Oh, sure. I can try.
I know that's a hard question. I come at people with that one and they're like, Cliff Notes version? I'm like, well, I mean, as much as you can do a Cliff Notes version, I understand being multi-passionate, but.
Well, I guess for my adult life, that'd probably be the easiest place to start with. I would say probably the Cliff Notes version is that I'm an avid traveler. I've made travel not just a hobby, but rather kind of the centerfold of my life. And it wasn't always that way. I went to grad school years ago thinking that I kind of wanted the standard 9-to-5 life and to live, you know, and work in Canada where I'm originally from and, you know, just travel for fun whenever I could. But as time went on and I continued to live in that reality, I just became increasingly dissatisfied. And I was constantly in this state of, I guess you can say fantasizing would be the best way. So I was constantly yearning, you know, and I hear this a lot from especially other millennials who went through the post-secondary system and got advanced degrees that, you know, we're often really ambitious people. We, you know, seek to or to kind of have our careers be the thing that defines us in a lot of ways, which of course now in hindsight I realize that's a very limiting way of looking at life. But once you get there and you realize, you know, this day-to-day cubicle 9-to-5 thing is not the riveting experience that might have always told me, but you start to question things, right?
Who like a cubicle and not good coffee was not going to be riveting. Who knew that?
Yeah, but it was. I think it was just the way that it was always promoted to us, right? That it was going to be, you know, depending on what you study, of course, too, right? Like I had gotten my master's in public policy and it was kind of sold as this means through which you can enact social change and have an impact on, I don't know, economic policy, things like this. And I am still a policy nerd to this day. So I thought like, oh, I get to be on the front lines. I get to help create these major pathways to, you know, social change down the line. That was my ultimate passion. But then you actually get into it and you realize, oh, this is not how it actually plays out in reality whatsoever. So after 2 years of doing that, I came to the realization that, you know, I'm kind of stuck here most of the year. Canada's cold for 6 months of the year. So like there has to be more.
It is so cold. As somebody with a circulatory disease, it is so cold.
Yeah, that would make it doubly worse for sure. And I'm quite a baby with the cold, so I definitely do not envy that whatsoever. But yeah, I had this constant yearning, and a lot of other people I had graduated with too were kind of expressing similar sentiments. But instead of making some sort of maybe career change or lifestyle change, many of them just stayed where they were at. And I could see them progressively feeling less and less satisfied over time. And I made this determination kind of for myself that I didn't want to live that way. So at 26, that was the first time I went abroad by myself and I moved to Vietnam. It was a drastic change from anything. I mean, I had been to Asia before, but never to Vietnam specifically. So, especially not to live. So that was definitely a transformative experience, and I knew it was going to be, but that's what I felt like I needed. I felt like I was stagnating before, and that a drastic change like that could kind of wake myself up, if that made sense. And that's exactly what it did. After that, I just got the bug, and I realized, you know, in some way or another, I have to keep this going in my life. And that's kind of been the kind of defining feature of my life up to this point.
And like you mentioned, that is so courageous, because you said 26 and you're a woman like me. Doing that alone as a woman, it had to have been equal parts terrifying and exhilarating. Can you describe your mindset going into knowing that you were going to live in Vietnam, which is a complete polar opposite culturally, weather-wise, of Canada?
Right. Yeah. And I think especially as a solo woman, that's something that people always instinctively say first, like, oh, you know, is that going to be safe? Or,
but really, we think that we're safe to where we are. And the question is, are we always? Maybe not.
Right. Exactly. And it's interesting you bring that up, because I'm from Toronto. And I mean, we've been seeing our crime rate skyrocket as of late. Like there's been more violent crime on the subways and the trains and the buses. Like there's a lot that's changing. We're even getting more guns here now too, which has never really been an issue for us before. So, I mean, that's just tip of the iceberg, and that's more recent. But you're absolutely right. Like you could be in downtown, you know, Los Angeles, Toronto, wherever, and you could be in danger, right? In most places I've lived, I can honestly say outside of Canada, I've actually felt quite safe most of the time. Now, granted, you still want to, you know, do your research on that particular place on safety issues, especially those that might affect women more or just in a different way. So I never try to go in blind, but at the same time, I kind of look at it as no risk, no reward, right? And I try my best to also find other people like me. So whether that's other solo female travelers or women who have also found jobs in the local country, or just, you know, foreigners in general in that particular place, or even befriending local people who are interested in getting to know you. I think once you have that kind of basic skill set, especially in a social context, it makes the transition so much easier. And before you know it, you're more so just having the time of your life than fearing anything.
I love that. There's a lot of social conversation around wanderlust as a term. And oh my goodness, I have wanderlust, or I was born with wanderlust. Do you think it's something that people are born with? Do you think it's cultivated over time? What's your opinion on that? I'm just really curious.
That's, you know what? No one's ever asked me that before. That's a really good question.
Well, some people tell me, oh my goodness, I was born this way. Whereas other people say, I got a taste of it, right? Kind of like you're describing. And once they got a taste, they couldn't turn back. And so it's so fascinating. There's a lot of different perspectives on, I have always wanted to travel from the time I knew what travel even was to, I had this one formative experience that changed my perspective and my ideas. So I just would love to know your insights on it too.
Sure. I think for me personally, it was definitely a little column A, a little column B. I actually had a conversation with my mother about this not too long ago, because she was reminiscing about one of the gifts that she got me, 10, and it was a globe. And she said, I think it was one of your absolute favorite gifts you ever got, because you loved learning about where all the countries were and you wanted to understand foreign cultures and that kind of thing. So I always had an interest in it, but I guess as a child, I didn't necessarily know or expect that I would be pursuing a life that involved a lot of travel. I just knew that I did want to see more of the world in a general sense. So it wasn't until I went to Vietnam as my first country for living abroad that I came to terms with the fact that, hey, this is actually a thing people do. Like, this is not something you have to just only do for a year and then go back home and then get your real life started, you know, because that's how a lot of people kind of talked to me about it at the time, is they said, oh, you'll have fun for the year and then you'll come back to reality. And it's like, well, that is reality too. What do you mean?
We can all make our own reality. You know, it's our life. Our life is the canvas. We're just painting our reality.
Right, exactly. But I think once you start painting outside of the numbers, it seems to get up some people's crawl. But for the most part, I'm fortunate enough to say that most of the people around me, whether it was my parents, my friends, people that whose opinions did matter to me were all genuinely supportive. And if anything, they said like, wow, I think it's incredible that you did this by yourself or to do it at all, let alone by yourself, right?
What is your advice for people in terms of respecting the culture of the country you're going to? Because I'm sure that's really huge for you.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I guess that would depend too on whether they're going to live and work there versus just be a tourist. And I say that because, of course, if you're living and working there, then there's probably a, just like for us, right? In our home countries, there's going to be a set of expectations for what's appropriate to wear at work versus what's okay to wear at a social occasion, right? So doing that just baseline research to start with is ideal. If you can go on YouTube and maybe look that up or go into Facebook groups and ask people about that, especially if you're going to a place that is more socially conservative, that's what I would recommend doing. If you're just a traveler, I mean, I'd recommend doing the same thing. But if you're just going to, I don't know, say like a more luxury resort type place and it's kind of isolated, then yeah, maybe you don't have to worry as much. But you should still be mindful of what the general expectations are for how you present yourself. So like, this is a good question too, because more recently, I've actually been researching Saudi Arabia.
No, that's where I was thinking of when you, what? We're on the same wavelength. Yes.
We certainly are. Yeah. No, but I've probably seen some similar posts as you, because I've seen women in Saudi that are just wearing bikinis on the beaches and stuff like that. So it has changed a lot. But at the same time, you have to be very, very mindful about where in the country you are, what your intention is, right? With how you're dressing, right? Obviously, you can't go to, you know, a city center like that, or especially not to a religious area that way. But the country is changing pretty significantly. So if you are going somewhere that's kind of in flux, I would definitely be as robust in the research as you possibly can and confirm that this is not just for the gram. I think that's an important piece because Instagram, I mean, I use it, I have to use it, but at the same time, it can very much feed into a false reality, right? Or give a false sense. And especially, well, with Dubai, or I guess the UAE in general, because I've seen this with Abu Dhabi as well, there's definitely an impression that, you know, it's just kind of this liberal, very open place. And in some senses, that's true, like relativistically speaking, but it's also not a place where you can, you know, say if you're with your partner or something, you can't be physically expressive at all. And some people go there not knowing that and then getting themselves in trouble. So it still kind of shocks me that this sort of thing still happens with all of the information that we have available to us now.
Yeah. And I mean, all countries are different. But sometimes I saw something, a friend actually had gone to Egypt and just what she wore, I was in a place that I didn't think was appropriate. I was like, oh my goodness, that was so Googleable. It was so Googleable. And I just, at first I was like, oh my goodness. And then I kind of felt compassion because I don't think we have this conversation enough with our young people, with our students about if you're going to another country, if you're going to study abroad, whatever it is, research it. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to be curious. It is so much better to ask questions than to be in a place and a situation where you feel uncomfortable because you don't know.
Yeah, there has to be this kind of aversion to shyness, I guess you can say, or just being reluctant to ask those questions because like, and it's all how you frame it, right? Like if it doesn't come from a place of like, I don't know, I guess like cultural superiority or something, then like most people are willing to answer you. So like I've even dealt with this in job interviews for working in places abroad. You know, I'll just simply ask, you know, what's appropriate attire to wear at this job, right? Or even just in society, like, are there certain expectations of how I should present myself or keep a low profile? And usually they're more than willing to accommodate those questions, right? And to answer them. So yeah, I definitely agree with you. That's like the intercultural education. I feel like it's one of those things people scoff at or think that it's not very important or serious, but it absolutely is. If for no other reason than to just avoid blunders and potentially even worse things from a misunderstanding.
And I think it's respect. It's like, I respect you enough to take the time to read about this, because we are constantly scrolling, or we're on TikTok, or we're on the gram, like you said. It's no harder to pull up some literature and read it. And so it just shows that simple respect from my perspective. So you have so much expertise. I think I could talk with you forever, but for our viewership, for our audience, if you could give one or two tips to the people that are listening about what they should know about travel or resiliency or living abroad, what would be those one or two pieces of wisdom that you'd want to impart on the people here with us?
Yeah, no, but I'm glad. It puts me on the spot more than I'm used to. I think probably the first thing I would recommend is just, and I know this sounds like such self-help, you know, maybe nonsensical talk, but this is really true, is the only limitations are the ones you put on yourself. I can't tell you how many times I have spoken with people or they hear my story and they say, oh, I can never do that. Why? Why can't you? Like, and then when you probe deeper, there really isn't anything at all that's preventing them. They just believe, for whatever set of reasons, that they are limited in doing what it is they want to do, whether that's just for recreational travel or to pack up and move somewhere, right? Which obviously in the latter case, that's a much bigger commitment. But even just for recreational travel, I've heard this a lot, and it's heartbreaking, because there's no reason why you can't. Like, I grew up lower middle class my entire life. Like, I didn't come from money. I didn't come from good connections, nothing. Like, all the traveling and living abroad that I've done has been a result of me just taking the initiative and also being stubborn and being determined, right? So if I can do it, then and other people can as well if they're determined enough. So that's the first thing I would say. The second piece of advice is definitely consider at least a few countries that are off the beaten path, that maybe aren't as touristy or aren't as popular. One of the countries I lived in briefly earlier this year was Nepal. Fortunately, they were just hit by that earthquake, but I was there before that happened. And I was living in Kathmandu, and I really didn't want to leave. I had to because of an emergency, but I really enjoyed living there and spending time there. And it's such a unique culture because it's wedged like between India and China. So it's got this really interesting mix of those cultural influences. And, you know, many of the people are just so gracious. And I had a wonderful time. But most people don't even consider the country unless maybe they're hiking enthusiasts or something. But there's more to experience than just that. So if you come across some countries in your research that are lesser known, don't write them off, because you don't know what they could potentially offer you. So that would be my advice.
I love that. In our culture, you know, the Western world, in fact, because we're both from the West, it does a great job at spotlighting France. You know, it does a great job at spotlighting Paris, but doesn't necessarily do a great job at spotlighting some of those hidden gems you're discussing.
For sure. And again, this is totally my own thing, but I've actually never had a huge interest in going to France at any point. Certainly like Belgium. I lived in Germany previously, so I had a great time there too.
I'm a Germany nerd. I love German history so much, and no one's been able to figure it out. I got my tongue tied there. I love Germany, and I don't know why, but I have a friend that lived there for 2 years, and she's told me just the most amazing cultural stories.
Whereabouts in Germany was she living?
Oh, goodness. I believe the capital.
Oh, in Berlin. Oh, Berlin. Nice.
Yeah, it was like 2006, so I'm kind of trying to rack my brain as to where she lived, but I believe Berlin.
That's quite cool. Two of my friends, actually, they're a couple. They lived in Berlin for quite some time, and I was living in Hamburg. So all three of us ended up in Germany. So we did kind of a mutual visit where I went to Berlin and then they came to Hamburg, and we got to experience each other's cities. And that was a great experience too, right? So again, living and working is different, but you know, if you have the chance to maybe even go to some smaller towns in these countries that are popular, because no one talks about that either. I mean, I would have done that in Germany, but COVID happened, so I had to come back home. Oh, but my goal...
You'll have to do it another time.
Oh, for sure. But I wanted to go outside of the major cities, right? I didn't just want to experience Hamburg Berlin and Munich, I also wanted to see like the smaller towns, maybe some of the castles around the country, right? But in due time, that will come. But those are off the beaten path as well. So even for the popular destinations, try different activities. Or actually, I can recommend an app / website that I often use called Atlas Obscura. I swear on this. This is one of the best travel resources out there, especially if you're looking to do something that's more off the beaten path. So even for a popular city, say like Tokyo, you will be given all these restaurants, museums, activities, things that many people don't know about and are total hidden gems. So my experience in Tokyo and many other cities where I've used Atlas Obscura were made so much better because I didn't even know these places existed beforehand. So that's a great resource to have at your disposal too.
Oh my goodness, I love this. I have two quick rapid fire questions for you before we close up. Number one, where do you think you'll go next?
Well, I actually already have arrangements to work out of Argentina for a few months. I'll be based in Buenos Aires, at least for the first month, but I also want to spend some time in Patagonia. So hopefully, maybe in my second or third month there, I'll make my way there.
So if our viewership wants to get to know you, they want to connect with you, follow along with your journey, where can they find you?
So I think probably the best place to connect with me would be on Instagram. So my handle is soloamy, one word, _ WBD, stands for Wanderer by Design, which is the name of my business. I do relocation coaching, and I'm also in the process of creating some online courses, like an academy, for anyone who is interested in relocation. So if you're looking to find a job abroad or become a digital nomad, be on the lookout because I will have some courses coming out on those subjects pretty soon.
Yes, everybody needs to connect with Amy because she has been the most wonderful guest. Amy, thank you for being with me here today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Brooke. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.